Hello and welcome to another episode of the Big Knowledge Football Dynasty Podcast. I'm Sonny and I'm your host. What is up? Welcome in. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe. Thoughts and prayers out to India right now. A lot of COVID still going on in the world, but India's got it especially bad. So really thinking of you, India. I hope you're doing better. I hope we can, as the rest of this, our countries that are starting to pull together and get vaccinated, I hope we can help you out. Still crazy times. Hope you're staying safe and I hope you're staying positive. Sunday morning is the day after the whole draft thing. I'm here to talk about it. It was a good draft. It was a fine draft. My wife always says, you know, things are fine. When you ask someone, she says, oh, it's fine. That means she doesn't really like it. And that, honestly, that's how I kind of felt about this draft. It was good. I was super excited for the first day. Those first, 10 picks or something, I was through the roof. I mean, it was just so exciting. And then, it got less exciting. And also my emotions just kind of dipped in things because as a Bronco fan, and, we'll talk about it a little bit. But yes, it was good. It was fine. I think in terms of when we talk about winners and losers, aside from the quarterback position, which I think there was some major, maybe some major tremors and some major shakeup potential, I think it was the status quo was a big winner for this draft because I don't think a lot's going to change in terms of when we saw what happened with the running backs, wide receivers. There's a couple running backs, a few wide receivers, a tight end, maybe a couple more. And then a lot of quarterback situations that are going to change possibly, but not, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of shakeup. Kind of what has been happening should continue to happen in terms of a lot of the running back wide receiver positions. You know, there's a few winners, a few losers, and those kind of things. We'll talk about those. But for the most part, I think it was, entertaining draft, and there was actually a lot to talk about. But at the same time, I don't know how impactful it's going to be in terms of fantasy, in terms of like shaking up the NFL. This might be one of those drafts that just kind of like doesn't make a huge difference to what we're seeing. Again, 2020 was an oddball year, so we don't even know if 2020 was what we can expect to see. Maybe we see some more consistency coming back from 2018, 2019, and some changes in players shifting and things like that. It's just hard to say. But anyway, there is a lot to talk about. I'm very excited to talk about it with you. I watched all of the Friday night, all the Thursday night, and then I didn't watch any of the Saturday. I just checked it on my phone. I hung out with the family. There's, I know some people love to just like get into this and talk about it, and they're kind of live streaming it and just kind of analyzing each pick. I like to soak it all in. For me, I really like to just watch it all. My head seems like it's spinning half the time in those early picks when it's like trying to register what everything means and what the next pick's going to be and all these potential things. So for me, I find it just a lot easier to just really watch, let it soak in, and then just process my thoughts. And so this is my first initial thoughts. This is the Sunday after. I've had a little time to collect my thoughts. And, I'm just going to talk about each player offensively. This is obviously a Dynasty Fantasy Football podcast, so I won't be talking about defense unless it's something really important, in terms of fantasy outlook or something. So anyway, a lot to get to. Let's go ahead and just get right in. So not much to talk about with the first two picks. You got Trevor Lawrence, you got Zach Wilson. I think the one thing that was interesting to me, or just odd to me, was that everybody seemed to know that the Jets were going to take Zach Wilson. I don't know, what exactly why they were so upfront with it or whatever, but it just seemed like everybody had the feeling. Maybe it was just because they felt like they didn't have to hide it because they knew Trevor Lawrence was going one, and then once they made up their mind, they just felt they could share it. But it did seem odd to me that there was no cover. It was just seemed so obvious, and it made me think maybe, with the Niners, once they trade up and they get Trey Lance, that maybe the Niners did have a smokescreen kind of thing. Maybe they did want to put out the Mac Jones kind of noise just in case the Jets changed their mind and wanted Zach Wilson or something. I mean, wanted Trey Lance over Zach Wilson. I don't know. These are all the games that we have no idea. But it did seem strange. And then, like I said, Trey Lance goes number three. I think that's where we'll start talking about it. So that was the most excitement. If you heard me talk about this the day after, or right after I heard this trade went down, I mentioned that I thought it was going to be Trey Lance, but it was based on very kind of just small amounts of information. And literally the day I put that podcast out, later that day I went out and heard that everyone was saying it was like guaranteed that Mac Jones was going to be the pick. So it's funny that it came back around and ends up being Trey Lance. Not that I had any kind of insight or any kind of confidence that that was going to happen, but I think it's the right move. And I think it's really interesting in the sense that, people talk about the Mac Jones thing, and I just felt like it was a terrible idea to move up and get Mac Jones. I really just thought, what a terrible idea. And now we know for a fact. There's a lot of things we may or may not know. We don't know if Mac Jones would be a great quarterback or who would be the better quarterback, if it's going to be worth it, blah, blah, blah. But we now know that it would have been a dumb move. It would have been a terrible move to trade up and get Mac Jones because Mike Jones fell to number 15. So they could have had Mac Jones at the 12th pick without doing anything if that's what they really had wanted. So, you know, this is hindsight 2020, but this is a good learning for us that all of us in the fantasy world who had this gut instinct that said, like, why are they doing this? This seems like bad value. I think a lot of us do a lot of trading, and we just know when you expect a certain player to go at a certain position, it doesn't matter how highly you have them rated, you should be kind of doing the math and working your way to, you know, get just above where they are, or, you know, if you really like them a little bit more. But you're not trading up that much future picks to get up to the number three spot when a guy falls to the 15th spot. And that is kind of how I think most people saw it playing out. So it was so strange. And so that's, to me, the only takeaway is just that it's interesting. I wonder if the Niners felt a little pressure, if they got the feedback from their fans and just felt like, you know, if we take Mac Jones, this is a lose-lose type situation because he has to be so good to make it right. And then Trey Lance, it's like a win-win situation. Like, there's so much upside that you can fail and still win, or at least in terms of the fans' eyes. And so that's something that was interesting to me. How there's a lot of positions, I think, especially in the NFL, where the coaches or the GMs don't really care what the fans think in terms of what they're going to do, unless it's, you know, off the field issue or some kind of, it's going to bring attention to the team. But when it comes to the quarterback, I think it really does matter. And this was one of those situations where I couldn't help but think that if they hadn't made up their mind on Trey Lance, it did not hurt at all that the entire fan base, the entire industry was saying, no, man, this is a bad decision. What are you guys doing? Why are you trading all that up to go get Mac Jones? In terms of Trey Lance versus the other two quarterbacks that were taken, for me, I really think that Trey Lance is right there is the top one. I mean, it may take a little while for him in terms of the 49ers and everything, but in a general fantasy football league where rushing matters so much, I see Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance and even Justin Fields potentially right there, 1, 2, 3. And Zach Wilson is a little bit further back behind, and then Mac Jones is considerably further behind for me. And so I am curious now just to see how the Superflex the drafts play out, because I think for a lot of people it was just the assumption that Trevor Lawrence is far and away, you know, the best NFL prospect, and therefore it just kind of felt like in Dynasty and Fantasy there's this kind of idea that he's just got to be that number one. But I don't know, it's good. Really, when you look at fantasy points, we don't care so much about the floor of Trevor Lawrence and his ability to, you know, not fail. That's a big part of what's, you know, intriguing about Trevor Lawrence is there's a very little, a small chance that he's going to fail. But when we're looking for upside, we're always looking for those top 12 quarterbacks, those top 15. We don't really care if a guy is a floor play. So for me, I'm always looking at ceiling. And then, yes, Trevor Lawrence has a great ceiling, but Trey Lance has the ceiling. Superstar Trey Lance might just come out of this draft because the 49ers, you know, went out and made that move. And so I'm excited about Trey Lance. I don't know how many shares I'll be able to gain now that he's kind of got the most coveted, because I was kind of hoping he would be the fourth quarterback and kind of fall into a little more of a questionable situation where there was a potential for him to sit for a little longer and everything. Now, yeah, he might sit behind Garoppolo, but the writing's on the wall. The Niners are going in a totally different direction, and Garoppolo will be traded as soon as they get any kind of return on him, and that's just my opinion. But that's why there's other the shakeup, the quarterback shakeup is real, and it's going to continue as we kind of let these pieces fall into place. So Kyle Pitts goes 4, and that's a great spot. He lived, you know, his draft capital lived up to all the hype. Everyone kind of, it seemed like this draft really was chalk. Like, it was almost like the NFL was either following the scouting, or the scouting really had a better picture of what the NFL was going to do. For whatever reason, this year, there wasn't as many surprises. I thought there'd be more surprises. It felt like everybody was kind of locked in on what teams wanted and what teams needed to do. Kyle Pitts, I think, is a great situation there. I've heard, you know, there's two sides of the story where they're like, oh, there's no way he can be the Darren Waller if you put him on offense with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, and now he's not going to get any targets. And it's kind of like, well, if you expected him to come out and be the centerpiece of the offense, where did you expect him to go? Because I don't know of a place. I mean, I'm sure there is somewhere if you start like brainstorming, oh, this could be an ideal spot if they potentially just targeted their tight end a lot. But realistically, Kyle Pitts went to a great situation. He went to the Atlanta Falcons with Matt Ryan, who played with Tony Gonzalez for years, who turned Austin Hooper into like a top 5 tight end or top 3 tight end or something. So this is it. This is a great situation. If you believe in Kyle Pitts and you want to put your stamp on Kyle Pitts as this Pro Bowl future stud tight end, this is the play. This is like, you couldn't ask for a better situation for him to go out and prove it. If he doesn't prove it right away, does that mean he's a failure? No. There's, like I said, there's going to be a limited number of targets for him, and I think he'll get plenty. When you have guys like Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones who demand some coverage or some potentially double coverage, I think Kyle Pitts could definitely eat over the middle, and we have a guy at quarterback who knows how to get him the ball. It all makes a lot of sense, and I think it's going to line up really well for him. Does that mean he's going to come right out of the gamebusters? Probably not, but I didn't expect that in almost any situation. So we'll just see how it goes. And so then the next pick is Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals. I guess it's good for Joe Burrow. I guess it is if he can stay on his feet. I've seen this so many times where, you know, you see this young quarterback, and then the team loads up on all these offensive weapons, and then mentally we start, like, projecting all these amazing numbers because, oh my gosh, he's got all these weapons. What, it's just going to boost Joe Burrow. And, you know, kind of theoretically, it feels right. That feels like the right answer, except for I watched the rest of their draft saying, okay, well, you better go get some offensive tackles. If this offensive line class is so deep and so good, and they got like one guy, and I watched so many offensive linemen go off the board and watch the Bengals just pass on them and go for linebackers or D linemen and stuff. You better have a plan. That's all. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend like I know what they're doing. And offensive line, I know it's all different schemes. And you better have a plan, Bengals, because this is major egg on your face, in my opinion. If Joe Burrow goes out there next year and he's running for his life again, and you've got all these awesome weapons running around, but they can't get the ball to him, and Joe Burrow is potentially hurt, or just it looks like he could get hurt again, it's just not a good look, and it's a bad, I think it's bad football building. It's just poor building when, you know, yes, Ja'Marr Chase is a dynamic player. And I liked, you know, when you put it in the idea that you're not going to get another Ja'Marr Chase and there's this class full of all these really young, talented offensive linemen, then I liked the theory. But if you don't go draft any of them, then I don't know. Then you tell me. You're going to have to prove to me that they've got a plan, because right now I didn't see anything. And that was the most disappointing part about that pick. I think I have a lot of Joe Burrow, and it's good for my Burrow. I have some T. Higgins, not so good for Higgins. I think if you got Boyd or Higgins, you're going to take a hit. There's no way you can bring in an alpha, serious alpha like Ja'Marr Chase and expect it not to affect your ability, you know, your targets. They're cap ceilings now. Their ceilings are capped because you're not going to be able to make all three super relevant. Sure, there's, you know, it's nice to have, someone to pull the defense to the other side. T. Higgins could definitely benefit, especially for touchdowns and stuff. And Burrow, like I said, should benefit the most, especially with this offense that loves to throw the ball, and now they have got all kinds of weapons to do it, and they've got the deep threat now with Chase. He's so versatile. He can be that deep threat and the X alpha, all that stuff. And so I think it works out really well, aside from the fact that you need to figure out that offensive line. And if you don't, you're going to look really bad, because everybody was saying the same thing, and you had a potential Hall of Fame type tackle sitting right there. Two of them that are really good, and one of them that was just kind of like, you just don't hear that many years the guys being, you know, compared to Donathan Ogden and these kind of players. And Penei Sewell was. So I was a little surprised, a little disappointed. Same time, you know, I'm not going to complain if they can protect Joe Burrow and they've got Ja'Marr Chase out there catching passes from him. That'd be great. Okay, let's move on. Jaylen Waddle to the Miami Dolphins. Again, I think it's a good fit. I think it's a bonus. It's, you know, we talk about our winners. We said Joe Burrow is a little bit of a winner. I think Tua is a little bit of a winner, because the Dolphins, again, did a lot to build around him. They're adding offensive line pieces. They're adding more wide receiver weapons. And so now you got speed with Fuller and Waddle. And I just like Waddle as a player. I think, you know, where he went in our startup in our rookie mock draft in the second round is crazy, especially when now that we see where they're being drafted and you look at so many of the other landing spots that are not appealing, people are going to be fighting over Waddle in that middle of the first round, I have this feeling, just because it's the best you're going to have available to you and you want some kind of piece. And I think he can be a dynamic piece, especially if you have return points in your league, then that's where I think it really steps it up, because he could be a dual threat doing return. And then they also, you know, might try to get him the ball on sweeps and things like that. So he's, you know, he's a versatile weapon, an offensive weapon, as they say. But very much like a Tyreek or something, who could develop into more of a number one type wide receiver, or just a legitimate outside threat, inside threat, alpha wide receiver. Okay, so then, yeah, there's offensive line, Penei Sewell, J.C. Horn was taken. And then let's talk about Patrick Surtain. I said I don't want to talk offensive players, but I want to talk about Patrick Surtain. The Broncos, they took Patrick Surtain. And this is where I'm going to take a little bit of a side, I'm going to veer off a little bit here, and I want to talk about my fandom. So as a Broncos fan, I was very, very disappointed that the Broncos did not draft Justin Fields. It, you know, going into the draft, there's, you know, I take myself back like many years, because I'm 44 years old now. I do most of my scouting now. I do it for the Dynasty podcast, for fantasy football. I want to know about these players for my own selfish team reasons. But when I was in my 20s, I used to scout the drafts, and I used to do it all based on what I thought the Broncos could get, what I thought the Broncos needed. I broke down all the rounds. I looked at players. I remember Ed Reed. I wanted Ed Reed so bad, and the Broncos didn't take him, and the Ravens got him. And I, from the, every time I saw Ed Reed for years, I saw him in the context of he should have been a Bronco. And so, you know, a lot of years I've been good at kind of compartmentalizing between being a fan and being, you know, the dynasty football guy. But I allowed myself this year. I was hoping the Broncos would trade up, get a franchise quarterback. I just feel like as a fan of the Broncos, I look at this team. They have all the pieces in place. They have this great defense, great defensive mind. There's offensive weapons all over the place. They just need a quarterback. And I'm biased. I've never believed in Drew Lock. I don't know what it is, but I just haven't been bought in on it. And clearly they aren't either. And we're picking at the 9 spot, okay? So that's where Drew Lock with that team, with that defense and that those weapons got us the 9th pick overall, okay? And next year's class doesn't feel like it's got that many good quarterbacks. It's rare that you see a dynamic class, and it's really rare that you see possibly the second best quarterback in the whole class fall all the way to the 9 spot. So I was hoping they would actually trade up to the 4 or the 5. I was thinking, yeah, just don't give up too much, but let's do it. I think this is our chance. And then he falls all the way there. We get to the 8. Me and my brothers are texting like, Justin Fields, Justin Fields. And then they come up with Patrick Surtain. So, you know, this is where I think his name is George Payton, they call him. It's like General George Patton, but it's General George Payton. And there's all kinds of good vibes about Payton up until this point. I'm just telling you, Broncos fans, this guy's smart, all of his decisions. And when I looked at his draft, I was like, this is a really, really good draft. I mean, he's got great defensive players, got a lot of value, a lot of steals, all kinds of players that were projected higher. I was like, this is a quality draft, except he didn't get a quarterback. And so, yeah, I've always been a person, I've said this before, I don't do my own scouting of quarterbacks. I just feel like it's like if you're decorating your house and then you decided to go ahead and just do your own electrical and plumbing. Like, it's a very complicated thing. There's a lot of nuance there. I'm not going to trust my own ability like I do with running backs or wide receivers on a quarterback and see if I say, oh yeah, I know exactly he's good, he's not good, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly why Justin Fields fell or that he shouldn't have fallen. But I'll tell you this. The general manager said he would have taken him if his favorite cornerback, Patrick Surtain, hadn't been there. And to me, that's just ridiculous. Like, if you really thought Justin Fields is right there, then to me, it shows how much of a scout he really is. Because from what I understand, he's a scout. He's the guy who he's swearing by his board. If you have a chance to get a generational quarterback, to get a guy that has the talent to just take your franchise to a whole different level, you don't worry about that you have a defensive back, a cornerback, a little higher on your board. I just don't understand that he didn't have the big picture. He didn't see the big picture. Maybe he did. Maybe he just doesn't like Justin Fields. I don't know. But I'll tell you this. If Justin Fields is a star, Mr. General George Payton, you have failed. Doesn't matter. I don't care how many good picks you've made over the rest of your tenure. I don't care how many of these guys turn out to be Pro Bowlers, Patrick Surtain, the best cornerback. I don't care. You failed. If Justin Fields is a star, you failed, and none of us will forgive you, and I'm very frustrated. And this isn't just for Broncos fans. This goes for the Giants. I mean, the Giants have Daniel Jones, and they just traded right back, and everyone's giving Gettleman all this credit. He was at that spot, and yeah, he got an extra first-round pick and got to, like, clear his name for a guy who doesn't trade back or whatever. But to me, he took Kadarius Toney in the middle of the first round, not a player that I think is worthy of that capital. And then at the same time, like, you had a chance to get Justin Fields. So there's a couple of teams in this. Carolina, they're committed to Sam Darnold. This, you know, we talk about winners. Sam Darnold was an absolute winner here, but they will live with this too if Justin Fields is a star, because it's just one of those things where I can't believe that I watched Justin Fields fall all the way to our lap. And this is as a fan. Like I said, I'm coming completely from a fan. Literally my energy level was so high. My emotions were so excited to that 9th pick. And when the Broncos took Patrick Surtain, it was like a deflated balloon. Everything out of me. And my brother started texting me talking about Aaron Rodgers. It's a lock to be traded to the Broncos. And I was like, okay, the Packers are going to eat $35 million and go out there next year with no quarterback or just start all over with Jordan Love because Aaron Rodgers wants out of there. And so that's a lock. It's a done deal. And the Broncos have decided that that's enough for them to just, like, We'll just bank on that. It's just like, from what I got after, and this was during the draft that I'm experiencing these emotions. And then what I got after the draft was, no, that didn't happen at all. That they got very clearly before they even picked that Aaron Rodgers was not in the discussion for them. So his decision, George Patton's decision, was based on he didn't think Justin Fields was the right quarterback for the Broncos. And so I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but as a Broncos fan, it was very frustrating. And I'm just, like I said, it emotionally took toll on me. I was very disappointed. It's like I think Bears fans, they're very passionate, but they're a little bit insufferable. And now I'm going to have to suffer through all kinds of Bears fans. I have Bears fans on different sites with me and stuff. And man, they're just already, I can't see enough of Justin Fields in a Bears uniform already. So anyway, that's how I'm feeling about it. That's why I wanted to talk about old Patrick Surtain being picked by the Denver Broncos. Since I'm already on the tangent, let's just talk about Aaron Rodgers for a second. I think it is kind of funny that a year ago we talked about this on this podcast. I talked about how, like, holy cow, can you believe that the Packers traded up, took a quarterback, and didn't even say anything to Aaron Rodgers, didn't even mention it to this guy. And then, you know, as this story plays out, this is essentially what the hangup is. Aaron Rodgers is holding on to that for a full year, and you had to know it. The general manager, the coaching, I just don't understand what they were thinking. I think that they didn't think Aaron Rodgers was good anymore, or that they thought they could do it without him. And then Aaron Rodgers showed up and threw 42 touchdowns, throws up an MVP season, and makes it very clear, like, yeah, you can't do this without me. You still didn't make it to the championship game. Good luck making it there with that kid Jordan Love that you traded, you know, up to. And so it's just funny to me. I think that Rodgers really, I think he's kind of a jerk, honestly. I think for lack of a better word, Rodgers is kind of a jerk. He's like a red ass. He holds on to stuff. You know, he's got an ego or an air, you know, he just doesn't, he thinks he's better and he doesn't like to be treated like, you know, he's not. And so, but from this perspective, in this situation, I completely agree with Aaron Rodgers. I have to say, if you're going to treat this guy like you're just going to year by year, the league MVP, a Hall of Famer, the most important player to your franchise, and then you have to look back at his history, what he's gone through. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, not only did he sit through that entire first round having everybody pass on him when he was expected to be like the first pick overall with the Niners, he falls all the way down, the Packers save him, then he has to deal with year after year of Brett Favre retiring, unretiring. Finally, Rodgers gets his chance. So yeah, he's got a little bit of an edge to him. He's got a little distrust to him probably in terms of how he views management and everybody else. And he's like, look, I'm never going to let somebody dictate to me again. And he wants some stability, and he wanted them to guarantee years. Oh, look at Tom Brady. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are willing to roll out the red carpet and say, yes, sir, Tom Brady, whatever you want. As many years as you want to play, sir, we got it. That's what the Packers should be doing for Aaron Rodgers. And the fact that they're not, it makes sense to me why Aaron Rodgers is feeling a little vulnerable. Not only are they not rolling out the red carpet, they're going out of their way to make him feel like he's halfway out the door already. And Jordan Love and pick and all that and not telling him about it, it screams all those things that the Rodgers just doesn't trust it anymore. And he's not going to, I just don't think he's going to let Gundekwisk win. As far as he's concerned, it's now a headstrong battle, and either out with that dude or out with me. And, you know, you take your pick, because I think Rodgers wants to play some more football, wants to play for many years. If he does, and maybe that's the thing, he's got to communicate that, and they've got to communicate that with him. But most relationships, I look at Matt Ryan, like, I'm guessing that the Falcons went to Matt Ryan and said, hey, what you thinking? You're planning on playing for a few more years, right? Because we'd love to build around you and keep going and, you know, keep this thing going, but we just need to make sure that you still have it in you and that you're not planning on retiring. And Matt Ryan said, no, I'm playing. I want to play as long as my body can let me or whatever. That's the kind of conversations I think that good franchises have. And then they feel more comfortable investing in that guy and building around that guy. If you have a relationship with your quarterback where they're not even talking about it, and then you're drafting quarterbacks and you're not picking up their options and doing all these funky stuff to their contract, and this is a Hall of Famer, the league MVP, then I'm putting this on the management, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm putting it on the management. We'll see how it plays out. I'm not going to cross my fingers and think that the Broncos are actually going to get him. But boy, the Packers have kind of screwed this one up, if you ask me. So a lot of players to talk about. I'm going to just keep moving through them. Some I will talk about more than others. As we get to the later rounds, there are some players that I hadn't heard of or didn't even do much research on or anything. I didn't go back and look at them and like do a lot of detailed research. So I just won't talk about players I don't know anything about. And we'll just kind of, you know, like I said, I'll start picking up the pieces and figuring out where it all falls in from there. But it's not like I felt like, oh, this is a major impact, I'm going to have to go find out right away what this means. It's kind of like, yeah, it probably doesn't mean anything. I'll look into it and see, you know, what that actually means, if anything. A lot of depth pieces in this draft. Okay, now our next player is not a depth player. This is one of my favorite landing spots. DeVonta Smith to the Eagles. I think it will boost his value a little bit because he is one of the more like obvious good landing spot, has a potential to be the number one wide receiver right away. Just difference maker, one of the few difference maker landing spots maybe in this whole draft. There's, you know, obviously some concern with Jalen Hurts and is he going to pass enough? I don't know. I honestly hope that they don't start out right out of the gates two gangbusters. You know, it's like I still want a buying window for Devonta Smith if possible, because I think this is a great situation. He's going to be that number one guy. And whether it's Jalen Hurts for this year and beyond or somebody else, it doesn't really matter. Devonta Smith's not going anywhere. That guy is a fantastic football player. And like I said, the only frustrating part is there was enough bad landing spots with some of these other players that I worry he's going to creep up a little bit more and be a little even less attainable than he already was in these drafts. And so Justin Fields went next at 11. We talked about that. The Bears got their guy. You know, Pace maybe can make up for his Trubisky woes and make the fan base like him again by going up and getting Justin Fields. And we'll see. You know, I'm going to be trying to add Justin Fields, so it's going to be a very interesting feeling for me because this is where my Bronco fandom is. I told my wife, like, this wouldn't bother me at all if I wasn't a Broncos fan. Like, if I just wasn't a Broncos fan, this wouldn't bug me at all because I just worry about my fantasy teams. But I want to cheer for Justin Fields, and it's going to be weird when I'm always going to know that the Broncos could have had him. If he's out there as a superstar Justin Fields, then it's going to be really frustrating. So the only other one player I want to mention was Rashawn Slater going to the Chargers. Even though it's not really helping our offensive players, I thought it was just a fantastic fit. They just got really lucky to have him fall. And Justin Herbert getting his left tackle. Can't help but be excited about that for him. Mac Jones at 15. You know, it's like sometimes things just fit right and they make sense. And, you know, I think Mac Jones could win the job. I think he probably will win the job. I give a little credit to Cam only because I didn't think he'd get this second contract, and the fact that Patriots gave him a second contract, I think it speaks to how Bill feels about Cam. I mean, Cam obviously showed some work ethic, something that Bill really liked, and Bill has stuck by him and has tried to, you know, they had a good early part of the season, and then Cam got COVID, and there's some potential reasons there. So I'm not going to completely rule it out that you know, Cam holds the job for a while, but it also wouldn't surprise me at all if just by his acumen, his ability to run the offense and accuracy in passing. We did not see accuracy in passing from Cam last year for big chunks. His arm is just, boy, so his throwing motion. And so that would be where if you get a guy in there who can run the offense almost immediately, it could be a great floor play, but I don't see a whole lot of ceiling. I don't see a whole lot of excitement. The Patriots look like they're going to be running the ball and, you know, taking what's given to them. You're talking about a rookie quarterback. We're not going to see the 40 touchdowns that he threw in college probably ever in his career unless he becomes Tom Brady. And I don't know. I don't see that. You know, it's like it's such a rare situation where you get a guy that's a pocket passer, get built around an offense that's willing to open it up the way these few offensive have. You know, so I don't know. I'm still looking at him with some interest. I still wouldn't mind adding shares at value. But it just, like I said, it's really, he is definitely the fifth one, and it drops off considerably. In fact, to me, he's probably the sixth one. We'll talk about another guy who I think has got, you know, it may take a little longer to get the starting job, but once he gets there, he can boost right up. And you already know who I'm going to say, so it doesn't even matter. I don't need to mention him. But okay, let's keep moving here. Kadarius Toney went 20, so that was the next offensive player. And yeah, I kind of like it only because I just hope somebody else sees the draft capital and takes him, because I have no interest in him. And I could be wrong, and if he falls far enough like he did in our rookie mock draft, or I get him in the early third or something, and I'm looking at all the other options, I might take him. You know, at least there's some upside there. There's some, you know, potential trade value, just something, you know, something there. First round value is always going to, you know, kind of create some buzz for him. So there's that, but not much else. Move on to Najee Harris. So there we go. Here's the big winner of the entire draft, probably, especially when we talk about general fantasy football. Najee Harris going to the Steelers. You know, as I watched this draft, I talked about how I just think it's a bad idea. Don't take running backs in the first round. It's just a terrible idea. But I saw these two running backs that went here right late in the first round. Really, when I was looking at the draft, I feel like the NFL teams, when it got to about 15, right where about Mac Jones was, that was pretty much the talent cutoff. It felt like after that point, it was kind of like everybody was looking at each other going, okay, let's just kind of go for our guy. What do we have on our boards? You know, it became kind of much more of a crapshoot. This is where this draft feels weak. And so in a weak draft, as you get to the late first round picks, if you don't see a linebacker, defensive line, who really feels like going to be that much of a difference maker, and you see a Najee Harris and you have a hole, it makes sense. So I like it. I think Najee's going to have a big, he's going to be, you know, it's going to be passes. He's going to be running the ball. I think he's better than anybody on their team. So in terms of how they're going to want to use him, I think they're going to want to use him a lot. And so, yeah, big win for Najee. I think he definitely the number one player in terms of non-quarterback position is Najee, or if you're in a tight end premium, maybe Pitts. And it's not the next guy, Travis Etienne. Unfortunately, Travis got drafted to, you know, Jacksonville. I think that was Urban Meyer welcomed himself to the NFL, welcomed himself to fantasy football, people becoming the new soul crusher. He's like the Belichick. He just wanted to like get out in front of it immediately. He's like, I don't want to hear from you fantasy guys here. I'm going to just come soul crush right now and just take all your enthusiasm and just make you just hate me from the get-go. Because after he drafted him, he comes out and says, like, we're going to have a three-way running back. You know, it's a three-way running back split, which I don't care. Three-way running back split, even if you had that in mind, for a team that's not a very good defense, it's not going to be on the field that much. I mean, sure, Trevor helps, but I don't think they're going to be the best running team in the league. If they are, then that's a good sign for them. But, yes, these are our losers. I definitely say you have to look at Etienne and more so James Robinson as some of the biggest losers. James Robinson might be the biggest loser of all. And I'm not saying his value is completely that he won't be able to do anything, but he's under contract. They have intentions of using him, but he's now there with a lot of other weapons that I think are going to get, you know, all the good touches. And so he'll be there, but it was all about volume for him. And so Etienne, I'm worried less about Etienne because I feel like Etienne, you didn't really want all the touches anyway. You wanted a place where he could be complimented by somebody, but then they're going to give him the good touches. They're going to give him chances to be explosive. His quarterback is the guy that threw him the ball 40 times in college. So I think there's going to be some kind of connection there and a willingness to check down to Etienne a lot, more so even than James Robinson, as good as he was in the passing game. So I'm not worried about Etienne being a complete failure. I do think it kind of caps his ceiling. It's not, you know, the bell cow, you know. But I don't know, like, play for the New York Jets, play for the Jaguars. I don't know. I think the Jaguars might actually be the better fit just because it might end up being the better overall situation with the quarterback and everything, that it's more stable and therefore it benefits the running back more. Where, you know, with the Jets or any of these other, quote, bell cow situations, it might have been a tougher situation for Etienne, and then there's the pressure of him doing it all. So, yeah, I'm kind of like on the fence about it, but I definitely don't think it was a win for him. I definitely think it hurt his value. And so, speaking of hurt his value, let's move to Rashad Bateman. Pour one out for Rashad Bateman, folks, because those Baltimore Ravens, they know how to ruin the wide receivers. It's weird. It's funny, because if you heard the GM, he was talking just a few days before the draft, and he was like, our wide receiver groups here, you know, it's insulting. It's insulting to them to think that, you know, people keep saying we need to take wide receivers in the draft. We have some talented young wide receivers. It's insulting to them. It's insulting to me, he said. And then he drafts a wide receiver in the first round. He drafts Tylan Wallace. He goes and ruins Tylan Wallace on me. Oh, it's just, you know, I'm feeling more optimistic about Hollywood Brown or Miles Boykin now, just because they're more likely to get out of Baltimore sooner now. It's more sooner release from purgatory there, from wide receiver fantasy purgatory, is the only thing you can hope for in Baltimore now. So I'm completely off Bateman. I know people are saying, oh, he's going to be the best receiver they've seen. Fine, go take him. Go see what happens. I just can't see how he becomes relevant, how you're going to want to start him. Hollywood Brown's a good player. Don't knock Hollywood Brown. And I still think Boykin has potential. How do you show what you can do when you never get a chance to do what you're supposed to do, which is catch the football, have people throw you the football? They just don't even get that many opportunities. It's very hard. And they can block. You know, Boykin can block. That's what they asked him to do, and he did it well. And you better hope Bateman can block too. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that. It was kind of, I was never huge on Bateman, so I was kind of hoping he would go somewhere that other people coveted, would push him up a little bit. Now it's like we're all going to be off of Bateman, and depending on how far people go off Bateman, I might even just come back around. But I just can't see it any other reason than trade value, because I just don't. I'm excited. He's now under contract, so he's going to be there. He's the one now that's going to be stuck there for sure. Okay, and then Elijah Moore goes second pick, second round to the New York Jets. It's a good spot. I don't think it's a great spot. It feels very much Jamison Crowder, like he's either replacing Jamison Crowder. It just, yeah, there was a lot of spots I could have liked better. But yeah, you know, I think he's a good player. He's going to get a chance. This is a new regime. They don't have a ton of weapons, so he could definitely emerge. But yeah, I don't have too much more to say about Elijah Moore. You know, I really liked him, but I thought that he could add a better landing spot. And so Javonte Williams, Broncos trade up, get Javonte Williams. Yeah, as a Broncos fan, I don't hate it. And honestly, you know, I don't love trading up for a running back, but they didn't give up too much. It was like a fourth round pick for a sixth round pick swap for the five spots. So I feel like they really, it was that cutoff after Javonte Williams. You could see those three guys were kind of head and shoulders above. And so it's interesting. I think it's not good for Melvin Gordon, obviously. I think he's the biggest loser. And I'm not even so sure that he's going to lose right out of the gate. Like, I still think they're paying him. They're probably going to play him. But in terms of any kind of long-term, what's next step for Melvin Gordon, it's probably, you know, on to the next, because it seems like Javonte Williams will likely slide in next year, be the main guy, and then they'll find compliments from there, would be my guess. And so, yeah, I think it's a good move. I think the Broncos, like I said, aside from the quarterback, I really liked a lot of the Broncos picks, and I think they've got some real talent. I don't know. They know something I don't, I hope. Okay, and so then the 17th pick in the second round is where Arizona took Rondale Moore. And I don't love it. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know why I don't love it. I just don't love it. I feel like maybe it's something to do with Isabella and with Christian Kirk and everything. I feel like that coaching staff, for as smart as everyone says they are, has struggled to use some of these pieces. And maybe it's Kyler a little bit because he's a running quarterback. And it's not, you know, I just don't know exactly what the deficiency is. I think Rondale Moore is a fantastic player. And I think that if used properly, I really just kind of want to see how they kind of use him. And then I might get more excited. But for now, it just doesn't feel all that exciting. I was hoping for a better situation. I think maybe the Isabella and the Christian Kirk lack of usage, or just not sure how they're being used, is kind of affecting my how I'm seeing this pick. But I'm not super excited about it, just to be honest with you. Then Pat Freiermuth goes to the Steelers at pick 23. Very interesting. They have Ebron still. I don't know what the contract situation for Ebron is, but I think this is a sign that Freiermuth is moving forward as the Pittsburgh Steelers starting tight end, probably sooner rather than later, because he is a very good blocker and stuff as well. So I like it. I think it's a good spot for him. I don't know what the quarterback situation holds in terms of Pat post Ben Roethlisberger, but you can't worry about that thing. I think that Pat Freiermuth is a good talent. I wanted to see kind of where he landed, and I think it was actually a very positive landing spot for my eye, so I'm giving him a little bit of a boost. I think I would be willing to take shots on him, especially when I look at a lot of these other landing spots and we're talking about tight end premium leagues. I'm feeling a little bit more Pat Freiermuth. Very next pick, Seattle Seahawks take Dwayne Eskridge, Western Michigan. I don't know if I talked about Dwayne Eskridge too much. Yeah, I like him a little bit. I think that this is the kind of place where now it just doesn't, it's another non-exciting place. What are you going to do? I mean, they just re-signed Tyler Lockett. You got DK Metcalf. You got an offense that doesn't really like to open it up and throw a lot. So I just don't see a huge ceiling. I don't see a lot of potential there. I see another pick that just almost feels like a roster clogger. It's just going to be, I almost don't know what to do with some of these picks, because roster clog central here. There's the next pick, Tutu Atwell, going to the Rams. So the 150-pound little speedster joining that wide receiver core. No interest. None. Not exciting at all. Now, this pick. If you want some excitement, there's a little bit. We're kind of boosting back up to excitement. The Carolina Panthers at pick 27 took Terrace Marshall Jr. Now we're talking, folks. This is where, okay, there's some meat on the bone here. There's some, like, upside. There's some, like, okay, I could see it working out. We know he had a little injury issues. It might take him a little time to come back. Either way, you've got already two main wide receivers. He can kind of develop. I like it. I think eventually he and DJ Moore could take over. Robbie Anderson, contract's not too long. So if Terrace Marshall develops quickly, we look at this player as one of those high-end, very high upside, potential alpha-type wide receivers. There aren't many of them, and there aren't many landing spots right now that are spelling out that kind of situation moving forward. And Terrace Marshall is. So he's definitely moving, if not moving up on my board, at least staying strong where he is. I'm feeling very, you know, I'd be much more confident and comfortable taking him over a lot of these players right now and just dealing with whatever I have to deal with in terms of waiting for him. So then the final pick of the second round, Kyle Trask to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's a great pick. I mean, this is the kind of pick where they have everything already in place. They have that 32nd pick. It's almost like a luxury pick. And they're just like, what do we do with this? Oh, yeah, this is a guy that we could develop. It looks and plays a lot like Tom. And we don't have to rush him out on the field as soon as Tom's ready. And the funny thing is, we're just talking about Aaron Rodgers. I highly doubt Tom Brady is feeling threatened at all. And you know why? It's because they're letting Tom know everything, by everything they're doing, by the way they're setting up his contract, that we are on board with you for as long as you want to do this. And then, yeah, sure, we're trying to figure out other things, but you are our guy. You are the piece that that's going to make this thing go, and we're all in on you. And that's not the message that Aaron Rodgers is getting. And so, sure, Aaron Rodgers is going to feel different. I highly doubt there's any concern from Tom Brady at all. I'm sure he's not taking it at all personally, because they're communicating in a way with him, and the way they're building their team and bringing everybody back, that this is Tom's team. We're going to ride Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, to Super Bowls as best we can. And then when he decides he wants to hang it up, we'll figure it out from there. We'll have a couple things in place. But we're not going to dictate to him. And that's not what the Packers are doing. And I think it's going to be a mistake. So let's move to the third round. This is where, again, I'm very frustrated with my own team, because I was thinking, okay, the Broncos didn't get Justin Fields. That's all right. Maybe they get Kellen Mond. Maybe they got their eye on Kellen Mond in the second or third round, early third, something. They're going to move up and get him. And the thing that GM did say is, when they asked him about, this is General George Patton, that when they asked him about the quarterbacks, he kind of alluded to the fact that, yeah, we were happy sitting where we were. Things didn't just fall to us the way we wanted to, or something. So saying things didn't fall to us the way we wanted to, well, Justin Fields fell to you. So what didn't fall to you? Maybe the third round. Maybe it was Kellen Mond going to the Minnesota Vikings. Oh, I love this spot. I love this player. I love the draft capital enough, but not, I mean, I almost love that it was just early third round, so it just doesn't make you feel like he's a guarantee, which he's definitely not, but it's the kind of non-guarantee player that I'm going to be betting on. Man, I am going to be betting big on Kellen Mond, especially when I feel like I'm going to be missing out on Trey Lance and Justin Fields now almost for certain in a lot of leagues. These two quarterback superflex, any kind of those leagues, I just not even have a chance. Where Kellen Mond, even in one quarterback leagues, you can just wait and wait and wait, and then just tag that guy right at the end. Superflex leagues, second round. I don't know. I gotta see how they play out, but I'm willing to spend second round capital. Looking at all these players, I'll find a place in the second round that I'm gonna try to tag Kellen Mond, and even the guy after him, Davis Mills here, going to Houston, because I don't know what's gonna happen with Deshaun Watson, but it seems very unlikely to me that he just comes out and plays in 2021. So with that, that's how I'm kind of leaning is. With all this stuff surrounding it, we've got no answers. It doesn't look like they're moving towards any answers quickly. So I'm going to err on the side of the fact that there's a good chance he's not playing. And so getting a guy like Davis Mills, maybe he wins the starting job, or maybe he's, you know, kind of Tyrod's out there. Either way, there's value there. There's trade value. There's potential production value. And, you know, he's got the draft capital now where it wasn't terrible. I think that just shows that the rumors, the hype about both Kellen Mond and Davis Mills, I think were correct. And Kyle Trask, that they were both, or all three, good quality, like either potential backup to starter potentials and developmental projects, but they were worthy of not just third day kind of capital with a lot of quarterbacks. They're worthy of day two capital. Day two quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts. There's some success in day two quarterbacks. There's also a lot of failures, but there's a lot of failures in the first round as well. So there's a lot of failures at quarterback. You know, quarterback is I was watching the Formula One. I'm not a Formula One racing fan, but I was on Netflix. There was a really good program. It's like a series. It's almost like All or Nothing, but it's for Formula One. I can't remember the name of it exactly, but it was fascinating. I really found it interesting. But what I really kind of like thought about was, when you see the drivers, every one of these drivers that comes up and makes their way to the Formula One racing, these guys have worked their way through the ranks and were a star along the way. And then they get to Formula One and they're just another guy. It feels like that, you know, with quarterbacks too. It's like every one of these guys, every quarterback is going to come along and show these great potentials. But once you get to the top level, somebody's got to fall off. There's only so many spots, and there's only so many elite spots. There's only so many people who can keep progressing and getting better and dictating to defenses. And so I don't know, you know, if any of these guys reach that level, but Kellen Mond to me has the potential to. He has, if he can work it out in terms of running offenses, accuracy, all the things that we maybe didn't see fully with him at Texas A&M, that he could end up being just a franchise-type quarterback, a Dak Prescott-type player. I really feel like that. And so he is one of the more exciting players for me, one of the gems that I'm hoping I can score in a lot of my drafts, especially Superflex and stuff, just because it'll be that nice balance of value and upside. And I love that. Okay, and this is actually one of the more interesting picks to me too, was wide receiver Josh Palmer at pick 14 of the third round going to the San Diego Chargers. So, you know, I feel like in a way the Chargers wide receivers, Mike Williams and stuff, were winners of this draft, just because they didn't go out and they didn't get a major weapon. They kind of kept everything the same. They've got Jalen Guyton, and they've got some like players that have kind of emerged for them, and they seem to like them. But drafting Josh Palmer in the third round, I think, was a statement that they liked this guy. And I talked about Josh Palmer. He was one of my kind of late round gym kind of players. So he's a good player. I think he's a physical player. I don't think there's like a huge amount of upside, but he's quality. And I just like, I'm definitely curious to see how they fit him in, and that they were willing to use the third round draft capital on him when there was other wide receivers out there that were maybe more like exciting or could do different things. He felt more like Josh Palmer is the kind of guy that you just want as that complement to Keenan Allen, to just be a target hog, a guy who takes a lot of receptions. He's not going to bring you lots of speed or anything. He's going to bring you sure hands and a reliable target. And so there's always potential when we're talking about PPR leagues and a quarterback like Justin Herbert. Okay, another interesting pick, tight end Hunter Long from Boston College goes to the Miami Dolphins. And so, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm a Gesicki owner. I'm a Gesicki fan. I don't think this is going to majorly affect him, but I do think it's going to have some effect. Hunter Long is a good pass catching and good blocking tight end. I think he's pretty reliable, and I think he's going to find a way onto the field. And so I think it puts a little pressure on Gesicki. I don't know whether they're just deciding whether they're going to keep him or not, or whether they really just want to focus on some two tight end stuff. A lot of teams go into two tight end stuff. It's not a death nail for Gesicki, but it also definitely wasn't excited to see it. It's better than Pitts going there, obviously. But I definitely wasn't excited to see them take a tight end, take one as versatile as him, and then take him in the third round. Not loving that. The next pick, Dyami Brown to the Washington football team. I think this is a good place, a good pick, a good value. I was like hearing Dyami Brown was going to go in the first or second round, and I didn't love that. Like when I watched Dyami Brown, I feel like there is some potential there. He's got a little bit of that James Robinson where you don't know how he does it, how he beats people deep all the time, and how he even gets separation sometimes. So you wonder like how that's going to translate to the NFL. But I've seen enough, and he does some under the knee stuff. He does some physical. He shows some physicality. But there's certain things about his game that look very average to me as well. And so I'm definitely curious to see how he fits in. I think it was a good situation for him to land with the Washington football team. And so of all the situations and his draft capital, everything, when we talk about value and just kind of how we look at it from a dynasty perspective, I don't hate it. In fact, I kind of like it. Next pick, Tommy Tribble, another guy I kind of like, going to Carolina Panthers, pick 20 of the third round. You know, Ian Thomas has had his opportunities, and Ian Thomas had his opportunity last year with this coaching staff. And I feel like this coaching staff really, from their college days and stuff, seemed to like tight ends. So it was surprising to me that they didn't target Ian Thomas as much as you'd think they might. And Tommy Tremble, he's no target hog. He's more of a H-back blocking type guy. But I don't know. He's going to be on the field. And if they get him on the field, and he's out there blocking a lot, and then he kind of shows his athletic ability and some, you know, better catching ability, we might, you know, say goodbye to Ian Thomas in terms of any kind of value. And so I'm not super excited about Tommy Tremble. Really want to see where he's going. If I can get him really late, probably be an auto add at the end of, you know, in fourth rounds or stuff. But if people kind of covet him too much based on his draft capital and everything, I'll worry a little bit, only because a lot of his draft capital is based on his blocking ability and his ability to impact the football team, not necessarily our fantasy teams. Okay, and then a few picks later, the Green Bay Packers finally go out and get a wide receiver, a weapon for Aaron Rodgers. They got Amari Rodgers. And so I talked about Amari Rodgers. He was also one of those kind of late-round gym type things. He fits perfectly, I think, with the Packers. I think this was their right pick because he's a slot kind of guy. He can do a lot of explosive physicality underneath stuff. He's going to – if he can – and he's smart and he's well-coached. His dad's a coach. He's the kind of player that I just really believe that Aaron Rodgers – if Aaron Rodgers is even there, will sync with, and that those two will find, and they've got their kind of, they've got Davante Adams, the number one guy. They've got Tanyan, who seems to be emerging as that tight end force. And then you've got a couple guys who can kind of give you that deep threat. I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Lazard, if they're fine at that number two spot, Amari Rodgers gives you kind of a versatile three piece that can maybe in terms of production be the number two, but he'll be playing that slot a little bit more. So I like it. I think that he's one that I'll be targeting. We'll see what happens with Rodgers going back there. Obviously that would change things. Okay, so then a few picks later, the San Francisco 49ers with the 25th pick in the third round take Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon goes to the Niners. And so I talked about Trey Sermon. I was excited about Trey Sermon. I think this is a great fit for Trey Sermon. Aside from the fact that they have like 20 running backs and they kept adding more, they added Elijah Mitchell later as well. So I don't know. I mean, I like it. I don't know where people are going to value him now. If he jumps up into the first round, then I don't like it as much. But I definitely could see if the Niners decided that he was the best of the bunch and they want to just feed him the rock, that Trey Sermon could be a star with the Niners, obviously. But so could Elijah Mitchell. So could Raheem Mostert. So could any of the other running backs. I thought Jamichael Hasty could be a solid back if he could work his way up. So I'm kind of, I can pretty much throw that one out. But yeah, Trey Sermon, it's interesting. I think that, you know, at first I was more excited. And I think a lot of people were more excited. But then when you start really looking at their running back room and everything, it's just a lot of running backs in there. But the capital, they gave him the third round draft capital. I think that's very good. And the landing spot is good if he can make it to the top of that depth chart, which remains to be seen. Next pick, pick 26 in the third round, the Houston Texans select Nico Collins. So yes, I think it's a great fit in terms of getting opportunity, in terms of, you know, not a lot of people ahead of him. I wonder in terms of development. I haven't seen them develop. Isaiah Coulter went there last year and we didn't see any development. And I just don't know like what kind of developmental staff this is. And I do think Nico Collins needs a developmental. I think he needs some development. I don't think he's just a guy that's going to come out and dominate. We'll see. We didn't see much from him in Michigan. It's really hard to know. But physically, super gifted. It's a great value pick in the third round if he pans out. But I, you know, in a way, I would have liked to see him go to a situation with a little better quarterback situation and maybe a little more, a little bit of confidence building in terms of development. I just haven't, I'm not sure I'm totally convinced that Houston's going to be able to develop him, but what do I know? I'm just a guy talking to a microphone. Anthony Schwartz goes a couple picks later to the Cleveland Browns at pick 28. You know, they took a couple wide receiver, a couple weapons. I'm not interested in Anthony Schwartz pretty much at all. I think that, you know, we'll see what happens with OBJ. We'll see kind of how it all plays out. I might change my tune, but I don't see Baker just throwing lots of deep balls. I don't see him utilizing Anthony Schwartz to the point where I'm going to see any kind of fantasy value of him. So hopefully he's one that just gets taken by people and kind of pushes other people down for me. And so as I get into these names, I'm telling you, it just gets less and less exciting. My enthusiasm is just hard to keep up talking about these players like Trey McKitty, tight end, going to the Chargers. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know much about Trey McKitty, to be honest with you. So I looked at him yesterday and thought, okay, I guess. I don't know really what you're doing there, but they obviously liked him, and they like him better than others. And so I want to mention one player here. If you play IDP and you have and you get return points, there's every once in a while a defensive back who's also a really good kick returner, punt returner. And there is a guy in the third round, Ambry Thomas, got drafted by the 49ers from Michigan. And that kid is a heck of a returner. So if he can get on the field as like a slot corner, get playing time as a cornerback, get tackles, those kind of things, and put up return points, it's a rare commodity. And so I always like to find those guys and mention them as well. Okay, before we go to the fourth round, I want to talk real quick actually about just a couple of the winners. I think this is a good spot to kind of stop because when you get those first three rounds, the way I watch the draft is a lot of time I'm like dodging landmines for my favorite fantasy players. And so I'm always looking like, you know, oh, like I have a lot of Mike Davis. And so when I'm watching the Falcons, I'm like, don't take a running back. And they never took a running back. So the whole time I'm thinking like, yes, Mike Davis is a winner. So Mike Davis is a winner for me. Obviously, I think they signed Javian Hawkins as a free agent afterwards, I heard. And there's they could bring in Duke Johnson. They could bring in, you know, Todd Gurley back or something. There's still things that could happen. But I think that was a clear win for Mike Davis. They brought him in with the intention of probably using him as the starting running back or potentially. And now it's looking more likely. And Arthur Smith loves to run the ball. I think I got a lot of eye rolls when I was talking about not trading Mike Davis for anything but like an early second. People gave me some crooked looks when I said that a couple podcasts ago, but it's kind of how I felt, and now I feel very, you know, strong about that. And so another winner was Myles Gaskin. You know, the Dolphins, they did it again. They added a little bit of offensive weapons, but really they did what they do. The offensive line, linebackers, they're building team building, and they got a tight end. And as of right now, they have Myles Gaskin and Salvon Ahmed as their running backs. So, yeah, I think it's a big win for Myles Gaskin. I have zero shares, so these are the kind of ones where, like, I was hoping, I don't know how I can say everybody watches it differently, but I'm watching with so many different things. I'm watching the Bengals, and like, you better take offensive line, and I'm watching my Broncos and thinking, you know, you got to get a quarterback, and I'm watching all these different teams with different hopes in mind, different things in mind. And so I watched the Dolphins. I was hoping one of these premier running backs would go there. Etienne would go there or something so that I would want to invest in that player. And I don't have any Myles Gaskin. It doesn't hurt me at all. So it's funny how we sometimes see the things through our own dynasty lens. And that's why I want to talk about some of these players as the wins and losses. Drew Lock, in a way, was kind of a winner, as hard as for me to admit. And then some of the losers are obvious. We talked about Etienne and James Robinson. Also Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, Jimmy G. All those guys are kind of losers. It's just in terms of value, they might not even give you any production now. That's going to be you're not going to be confident starting any of those guys, you know, for very long into the season and relying on them to be there when you need them in the playoffs. Not at all. So let's keep moving here. Let's get into the fourth round now. This one of my biggest movers. I talked about, you know, the fact that there are not that many big winners or whatever once we get to the fourth round. But one of the biggest winners to me and one of my biggest risers was right there at the top of the fourth round. Michael Carter, running back of North Carolina, goes to the New York Jets. Boy, I like it. I mean, I liked him okay. I was fine with him. I think his pass catching is good. Thought he looked a little stiff. There's other players I liked ahead of him. But I'll tell you what, his draft capital mixed with situation, mixed with his talent and the fit for the system. He doesn't have to be a huge back. There's just not a lot of competition with Michael Piron or whatever. I think that Michael Carter, a fourth round pick, could come out and win that job and be a star value. If you can get him in the second round now in fantasy drafts, for as bad as this draft feels and unimpactful as it feels, this might be one of the most impactful players, and he might be one of the best values too. So Michael Carter on my radar, not just on my radar, moving up. I think it was one of the better spots and one of the bigger risers. Dez Fitzpatrick, wide receiver of Louisville, does go to the Tennessee Titans. So I was sitting there hoping, like, take Tylan Wallace. You know, every team I had my own thing, and I wanted the Titans to take Tylan Wallace. I thought he would be so perfect. And it didn't happen. They end up going with Dez Fitzpatrick. There is some buzz about Dez. He's kind of like, from what I understand, he's kind of underwhelmed, but he's got a lot of physical gifts. I haven't done a lot of research on Dez Fitzpatrick, but I did remember hearing about him in some different situations. Some people really liked him. Doesn't completely surprise me that he's here, that he jumped some of these other receivers, even though he wasn't a name that I kind of had mixed in there. So I'm going to do a little research. I'll kind of get my feels for that. But, you know, not super high enough, but at the same time, like, what are they going to do? Throw A.J. Brown the ball 500 times this year? Like, A.J. Brown through the roof to the moon. A.J. Brown to the moon. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but Dez Fitzpatrick does fit in there somehow or could fit in there somehow. So that one is interesting. So then Detroit Lions take Amon-Ra St. Brown in the second round, in the fourth round. I thought that was good value for them. It's going to be interesting. This was going to be one where it's Quintez Cephas. You know, he didn't have a lot of competition for what he does, and now St. Brown can play that slot, can play outside as well. We'll see what happens, but I don't know. I'm curious to see. I still lean towards Cephas because I feel like he's built more like Cooper Kupp. He kind of has that feel where maybe Goff will just kind of lean on him and trust him more, the big body kind of slot receiver as opposed to the smaller kind of shifty guy. I don't know. I think it's a good pick, though. I've never been huge on Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't know, like, in terms of, like, a major fantasy impact. I think he might just be a guy or at least, like, above-average guy. But there's some potential there. They didn't add much in terms of wide receiver. And so I don't think you can ask for too much a better spot. And he got late draft capital, so it should push him down. Might make him intriguing in terms of if I can get him a little later. Might add some shares there. Okay, and then Kune Nwangu. Okay, it's spelled kind of like Kine Nwangu, but it's pronounced Kune Nwangu. Backup running back for Iowa State, basically behind Breece Hall. Didn't get a chance to do a lot. Got drafted by the Minnesota Vikings there in the fourth round. I kind of like it. I just, because he has explosion. There's a lot to like about his gifts. He's a kick returner, and they just didn't get a chance to see him because he's playing behind Breece Hall. So maybe there is something there. Maybe there's more than you know what we've seen in terms of statistics or what he's produced. Definitely has some physical gifts. So I'm going to keep him on the radar. Not overly excited about it, especially when you're talking about he's in Minnesota. They already have Madison and Dalvin Cook. But they might, you know, like I said, never know how it all works out. People get injured. For now, he's just way on the depth chart. But a name to remember, possibly. With the very next pick, New England Patriots take Ramondre Stevenson in the fourth round. Yeah, you know, I like it for him in the sense that it kind of confirms the fact that he's a good football player and he deserved to be drafted. He might not be very fast, but he's very good at what he does. I don't see a lot, like, any kind of intrigue in terms of fantasy now, especially with the Patriots. The way they do running backs and the way they use running backs, he's LeGarrette Blount, but less. It's like LeGarrette Blount if he only got a fourth of the carries or something. So no interest there, but, you know, it's kind of good to see he got some draft capital. I think he's a good player. He'll have his days, maybe. John Bates, Washington football team, tight end. Don't know a whole lot about John Bates, to be honest with you. I saw what they were talking about. I read a little bit. Can't really add much. Chuba Hubbard, running back for Carolina Panthers. Yeah, I know that the wife of the coach said she wanted to take him because they used to play against him in college, and he was always running all over him. You know, he didn't get a lot of playing time this year, but they had their own You know, there was him and his coach didn't necessarily get along after all the stuff that went down the previous year. So it doesn't surprise me that his coach didn't give him a lot of playing time. He might be the guy from 2019, which I never loved Chuba Hubbard from 2019, but I think he's, you know, at this point in the fourth round, it's just kind of an overlooked prospect. There are a lot of people that love him just because of the name and just because, like, he was a Devy kind of darling at one point. He's just too upright for me in a lot of things in terms of, like, super high upside. But, you know, Christian McCaffrey goes down. They don't have other running backs. He would probably be the best of the bunch. And he can play, you know, a similar role in pass catching and those kind of things. So McCaffrey over the last season or so hasn't been all that healthy. You never know. Chuba Hubbard, you know, is just a flyer. Might end up being, you know, paying some dividends down the line. A lot more than some of these guys who are just going to be roster cloggers. Like a Jalen Darden going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as if they don't have enough. They already signed Antonio Brown. They've got Tyler Johnson. Now they got Jalen Darden. I like the kid. I think he's actually a decent player. Don't love the fit in terms of we're just never going to see. There's no need for the kid. We'll see you in a couple years. I'll check in. Come check back in on you, Jalen. A couple picks later, Tylan Wallace. Finally, my guy Tylan Wallace gets picked. And he gets picked by Baltimore. I hate it. They're savvy. They're savvy coaches. I mean, but how many wide receivers do you need to add to, you know, to this group to finally say, okay, it's either the system, it's our quarterback, and it's not going to really put us over the top to have 20 mediocre, good route running wide receivers. And what you maybe need to do is just find one super duper alpha, which you don't have, by the way. Bateman is not a super duper alpha. Hollywood's not. And then you're tied in, maybe the closest thing you have to that. I just don't know. I love the player, and I hate the fit, and especially when you squeeze him in there with Bateman and all these other things. It's just like, you know, see it. The only share of Tylan Wallace I will probably have is my Devy share that I already have. And it's disappointing, but you got to look at the way it is. We'll see where he falls in drafts and everything, but I just, like, roster, it just feels like such a roster clogger. I have more interest in Hollywood now. At least he's going to get out of there sooner. Miles Boykin is going to get out of there sooner. Okay, this is an intriguing pick. Number 28 to the New Orleans Saints, Ian Book. Quarterback. I said I liked Ian Book. We talked about him in the live Mac as one of those last names. For some reason, I liked Ian Book, so it doesn't shock me. I think some people were shocked. I liked him. I thought he was actually, you know, there's intriguing things about Ian Book, the way he played. He's a winner. Do I think he's a real threat? Possibly. He could be. It really depends on how poor Jameis plays and whether Taysom can take the next step, because, you know, Ian Book has some of those skills of both players in the way he's pocket passer. He can also run. So, you know, if anything, it points to me that they're willing to be versatile. They are giving Taysom a chance, because Ian would back up a system for a rushing quarterback pretty well. He would be kind of an ideal backup for a system that's built around a rushing quarterback. Keep that in mind. Jacob Harris went to the Los Angeles Rams at the end of the fourth round, the wide receiver out of UCFS. And honestly, I don't know much about him at all. And I hate the landing spot as well with all the players there to have. But he could emerge. You know, that's where you just kind of watch the training camp stuff. See if certain players are emerging, if certain hype's coming. Keep your ears peeled. That kind of stuff can really help. So into the fifth round we go. Luke Farrell goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know much about him. I'm not really that excited about him. What I see, he's from Ohio State, so obviously he has some familiarity with Urban Meyer. I don't know how it all fits in, but nothing I'm going to get too excited about there in the fifth round. Brevin Jordan does go two picks later. He goes to the Houston Texans. They have a myriad of tight ends as well and unknown quarterback situations. So, and I feel like Brevin Jordan, just with his injuries, with kind of there's just things about him that I was kind of skeptical on anyway. Seeing him go in the fifth, seeing him go to a situation like this doesn't get me overexcited. It would be very low on my radar at this point. Kenneth Gainwell, this is the one. This is the one I know that's just like, it's a gut punch to most people. I think a lot of people who love Miles Sanders, a lot of people who had this dream of Kenneth Gainwell going to the Falcons, Kenneth Gainwell going to, I believe me, I was like, no, take Kenneth Gainwell as the Falcons for my own selfish reasons. But watching Kenneth Gainwell slip all the way to the fifth round was a surprise to me. I think his passing game abilities alone were better than a lot of these other players. And I just felt like it was a little surprised he went this late. I think he's a great fit. I think the Eagles, I don't know how he's going to affect Miles Sanders, but I can't imagine it affects him in a good way, because they bring back Jordan Howard, so now they've got some power back stuff. They've got Jalen Hurts now, so he's going to get some rushing touchdowns. Now you bring Kenneth Gainwell in, a guy who catches passes. I don't have any Miles Sanders, and I can promise you I won't be adding any Miles Sanders. I know there's tons of Miles Sanders truthers and Miles Sanders RB1 and all this stuff. I don't know. I don't see it, especially now that they add such a dynamic player and a great value, a great place in terms of just late round for the Eagles. That was a good pick. I don't know. Like I said, I know fantasy gamers aren't loving it, but I think in terms of the Eagles, they're liking it. And if Miles Sanders gets hurt or something, There's some potential there. Emir Smith Marset goes a couple picks later to the Vikings. I actually find this is an intriguing one. He's definitely an intriguing player. And the Vikings are one of these teams that I think there is a need, maybe not right away for wide receiver, but down the road. They've got Justin Jefferson, and then what else? You know, who else is really coming down the pipeline? So Emir Smith Marset could be that guy. He could develop there. Kind of keep an eye on where he's going. Noah Gray, tight end out of Duke, goes to Kansas City Chiefs. Don't know much about him. Being that Travis Kelce's there, not going to worry too much about it. Like I said, might read more into that. Zach Davidson, Vikings, draft a tight end. Don't know much about him. Not much to say. Like I said, there's a lot of non-impact in this draft. There's Simi Fehiko goes to the Dallas Cowboys. So he was one that, you know, he had that athletic ability. There's definitely some athletic intrigue with Simi. And then he goes to a team like the Cowboys, where he's buried behind players who are not only really good, but are probably going to be there for a while. I mean, I guess Michael Gallup can move on, and we don't know the long-term future for Amari. So if Simi Fehiko like really shines and steps up, then yeah, there's like some long-term potential. But in terms of us and our dynasty drafts and trying to add these guys and see any kind of return on value, any kind of production return, anything, it's just these are all like this kind of bets that we're just going to have to watch and monitor, and none of them are going to feel comfortable or good, honestly. So as we move to the sixth round, Frank Darby goes to the Atlanta Falcons. I like Frank Darby, and I like the landing spot. Again, I don't know. We just have to wait and see. These are sixth-round picks. Elijah Mitchell to the San Francisco 49ers. This is a sleeper one just because, yeah, I like what I saw from Trey Sermon. I like a lot of things from Raheem Mostert, the speed, this and that. Elijah Mitchell has speed. Elijah Mitchell, you know, is a dynamic player. Elijah Mitchell, to me, could come out of nowhere and surprise. And so he's a good fit for this system. He's explosive, which, you know, Trey Sermon isn't. So, you know, while I think obviously they spent the draft capital on Trey Sermon, I think you would lean to him getting that first opportunity, and whether that's ahead of Raheem Mostert or not, I have no idea. But in terms of the cost that it's going to acquire, I think there is some value there with Eli Mitchell of Louisiana Lafayette. Running back Gary Brightwell went to the New York Giants, and I don't know anything about Gary, so I'm not going to talk about him. I did see that Larry Roundtree went to the Chargers, and I like Larry Roundtree. He's got a little speed, got a little wiggle, got a little power. All-around back, not a lot of pass catching. Maybe that's why they like him. They want some goal line type stuff. I don't know what Joshua Kelly is going to bring, and you know like how he develops. But we know what Eckler brings, and so Roundtree is kind of a nice compliment to him. And so I don't hate that pick. Again, I don't know what it means for fantasy. Here is an intriguing one: Chris Evans, Michigan, goes to the Cincinnati Bengals. They don't have a lot behind Joe Mixon. We've seen Joe Mixon's injury concerns. This kid is talented. Was like a high prospect, kind of went under the radar, didn't produce, had some injury stuff. He now tests really well. There's some intrigue there with him. So I would like to see. Michigan is such a disaster that I'm not going to count anybody out. A couple picks later, Marquez Stevenson goes to the Buffalo Bills, maybe return specialist, depth player, nothing to get excited about. And Shai Smith goes to the Carolina Panthers. So this is another one where it's like the landing spot with the Minnesota Vikings, where it may take a little while. We don't know exactly how it'll pan out, especially when you're talking about Terrace Marshall. But if Terrace Marshall doesn't develop and we're looking for another name that might emerge, Shai Smith might be that guy. Racy McMath went to the Tennessee Titans. And Racy, I didn't know anything about. I did look him up because he went to the LSU. I guess he's an intriguing prospect physically, but it seems like very inconsistent, not a lot of production. Interesting pick. I don't know. The Titans have their own way of doing things. They're probably looking for a certain thing. But it feels like it's going to be a lot of Derrick Henry and a lot of A.J. Brown coming out of Tennessee Titans this year, which I don't know. If I'm a defense, I kind of like that. You just load the blocks and double-team A.J. Brown and make him beat you. We'll see what happens. Okay, I'm just going to keep moving through these. Jalen Camp, wide receiver, goes to Jacksonville. Can't speak much on that. Demetric Felton, that's one of my favorite kind of deep late-round guys. Demetric Felton from UCLA went to the Cleveland Browns. I kind of like this fit. I think that I like the fit better than Schwartz in the sense that there might be some potential, especially with return yards, those kind of things. He's a dynamic, versatile player, and so depending on how they use him, I kind of like it. But it's late round, and I think his lack of athletic prowess really hurt him. So not too intrigued, but I like him a little bit. Khalil Herbert going to the Chicago Bears, kind of like that. I like Khalil Herbert. I thought he was one of the more exciting backs. But he's got some tough competition in terms of Damian Williams to, you know, to fight for that backup job, and then Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery likely to be the starting 1-2 punch. So, you know, I'm not a huge David Montgomery guy. I feel like with Tariq Cohen, I invested a lot with him early, but I was a little disappointed just in like how I don't feel like he ever reached his potential. I think there was a lot more athletic gifts, and I feel like he did get a little lazy. He kind of admitted that he didn't take it so seriously. He, you know, they didn't take care of his body. Certain little things that he kind of mentioned, but then he got that big contract anyway. So obviously, maybe in that offseason when he came back, he showed some stuff. Then he gets injured. I don't know what it all means. So I'm on the fence about Tariq right now. I'm not like super excited like I used to be. I need to see him kind of reemerge and show me something. Sam Ehlinger to the Indianapolis Colts. Intriguing pick. I liked Ehlinger a little bit. This is a late round grab. This is just kind of a depth play. I think he's a better backup. Not much, I think, in terms of long term. Then Seth Williams, my guy Scott Connor, who said he was really high on Seth Williams, goes to the Denver Broncos. So this is another one of those where it's just like, ugh, buried behind much better players, not likely to see the light of day anytime soon. So we can just sit there and watch. He might be young, but he's not going to be young by the time he sees the field, I guess. Daz Newsome, Chicago Bears wide receiver. Yeah, whatever. This is where I'm not excited about anything from this point on, I think. I think this is really the end of any kind of intrigue for me. The seventh round, Jake Funk. He is kind of interesting. I guess he's kind of intriguing. Jake Funk is a running back out of Maryland. He got drafted by the Los Angeles Rams, so it'd be interesting to see kind of how he plays in. Trey Nixon, wide receiver out of UCFS to the New England Patriots. Jared Doakes, running back, goes to the Miami Dolphins. I don't know much about Jared Doakes. He will be one of those players that I probably do more like reading about, looking into than any of these late round people, just because I need to know, like, is this just a depth play? Is this guy special teams? I don't know right now. I'm going to be diving into Jared Doakes, though. He is one that I'm definitely curious about just because the Dolphins and their situation. He's one of the only running backs that they took. Ben Skowronek for the Los Angeles Rams, wide receiver out of Notre Dame. Kwon Baker out of South Alabama to the New Orleans Saints. Kylan Hill to the Green Bay Packers was a little intriguing, I guess. Kind of buried there, but a player that a lot of people kind of saw some upside with, had bigger hopes for. Now it's kind of like, well, he's not going to get a chance to show it anyway. So you're going to have to either believe in Kylan Hill and take him, or you're just going to have to, you know, kind of see if he can emerge and just remember the name. Same thing goes for my guy Jamar Jefferson. Now he's on the Detroit Lions. I think he's a good combo, you know, like a good fit if you played him with a DeAndre Swift. So depending on how they want to do that, depending on where Jamal Williams fits in, Jamar Jefferson could be kind of a 1-2 punch type thing. Mixed in with giving Swift the majority of the carries, very much like an ETN James Robinson kind of thing. I could see that a little bit. Jamar Jefferson, James Robinson, DeAndre Swift, Travis Etienne. Some similarities there. Could be similarities how they use them. Hard to say. So that is it. That is all. Seven rounds. Like I said, there's some winners. There's some losers. There's a little bit of surprises. But for the most part, I felt like it was fine. It was a fine draft. I think it won't make a huge impact. I don't know what it all is going to mean. Once I kind of now start looking at the rookie drafts and trying to see how it all plays out, and I'll start looking for values or things that I think are values, or, you know, try to fit in some kind of way to make this draft work, or I'll start trading my draft picks away. Start just trying to get some players and go from there. So that is it. Thank you all for listening. If you want to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at BigKnowledgeFFB. That's BKF Sunny. Or you can email the show at BigKnowledgeFootball@gmail.com. As always, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon. We'll be right back.